How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are live on the air here from Las Vegas, Nevada. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, including last night's UFC 132, Faber versus Cruz, one of the big fights of the year, one of the big shows of the year for UFC. And, of course, a lot of news coming out of that show. It was a great show after the Facebook feed ended. For those of you that did not see the show on Facebook, you don't have to bother. It was so horrible, in fact. Actually, there were two fights that were really bad. The opener was all right. The Andre winner fight had a good round and a half. But regardless, when the Facebook feed was over, and it appeared that everybody was on the verge of falling asleep, Booker Joe Silva went backstage and told everybody, "This show sucks. We need a good show. You guys need to go out there and save this thing." And that is what people did, starting with the Spike TV prelims and followed up with the pay-per-view itself. Some awesome fights. We had three explosive knockouts in a row. We had some awesome fights. And we had a great competitive main event, which saw Dominic Cruz retain the 135-pound title over Uriah Faber. We're going to talk about that show. We'll talk about what went on backstage in the press conference. Who is getting the next title shot against Cruz? Is there going to be a Faber-Cruz rematch? What is the future of Wanderlei Silva after he got knocked out by Chris Leben? So much stuff to talk about from that show, so we're going to get into that. Plus, the pro wrestling news of the week, including CM Punk's promo on Raw. Everybody's talking about this promo. I had people calling me that haven't been watching wrestling in a long time who heard about it. They went online, they saw it, and now they are into pro wrestling again. How long they're going to be into it is a question. CM Punk supposedly is leaving in 2 weeks after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, but we'll talk about that and where things might be heading, what they can do, some of the different possibilities, a lot of other stuff. I'll talk about all of the other news in wrestling and mixed martial arts, including Nate Marquardt, his testosterone replacement therapy issue, I guess is the best way to put it. Plus Ric Flair, what's going on with him in TNA. We'll talk about the Impact show this past week. Limited commercial interruptions. The show did a 1-3 rating. We'll tell you if that's impressive or not. Plus Zack Ryder over the limit buy rate, which is actually pretty good this year. Bruno Sammartino and his heart surgery. We'll talk about Urban Wrestling, the ROH iPay-per-view. Randy Orton admitting to an overdose. And so much more. All coming up in the next 2 hours, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. All right. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and also of Facebook. We'll give out some Facebook addresses later on in the show if you want to befriend Mike, befriend myself, befriend the show. All available at Facebook.com, but Mike, I was going to start here talking about the UFC show last night here in Vegas, but I've decided that since most people are talking about CM Punk, like the whole world, including there were some people at the UFC show last night that were talking about the promo, some people that actually work for UFC, so a lot of people talking about it. What did you think of the promo, and what did he say?
The promo was absolutely outstanding. I mean, when you have guys like Dan Raphael from the ESPN boxing guy, I mean, everybody has universally praised this promo by CM Punk on Monday night, and it shows that, you know, professional wrestling or sports entertainment, whenever you want to call it, I mean, it built its roots on sucking you in emotionally and taking things from the real world and playing to them. You know, the whole, for everything that went around Austin and McMahon and that storyline, it was basically, when you got down to the end of it, it was boss versus employee, and doesn't every employee just want to punch their boss, you know, their overbearing boss in the face? And it was that emotion that they were able to ride the wave of. In a way, that's what they're doing here this time again. CM Punk's contract is really up. And basically, and before I get into that, the promo basically went like this. CM Punk went out and ended up putting John Cena through a table at the end of the show. And he went up the ramp, he sat down, and then played into everything that he had been saying. Last week he had said that his contract was up. That's true. And then he sat down and explained why he was leaving. And almost everything he said, and in fact, I guess it would be everything he did say, even down to people shoving magazines and programs in his face at the airport at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, that drove him nuts. The fact that, you know, he's not in WrestleMania next year because The Rock, who doesn't even wrestle for him and is a guy he looks at as walking away from the wrestling business, he's already slotted into the main event. And what about him on the roster? What about a guy who does everything right, who is, you know, drug free and all these things, and he's been, you know, being put down. And a lot of his fans and a lot of people on the internet say the same thing. It drives them nuts in the position he's in. And the promo and the way they framed everything touched on everything for everyone. You know, he established the week before that he was going to be leaving. So for the average fan who's not on the internet and who doesn't pay attention to every little last thing, you know, they actually get it. Okay, that's why he's leaving and he's upset. But what he said, those words played into all the internet fans and all the hardcore wrestling fans out there who know who Colt Cabana is and know what kind of bad rap he got, or not a bad rap, but as far as, you know, his exit from leaving WWE and the fact that he was underutilized, they know that story. They know about the fact that he doesn't like being bothered at airports, and that drives him nuts. And they did just a great job with it. And they played even to last week, and a lot of people have asked whether this is actually a work or a shoot. Jim Rome from ESPN got completely bamboozled by the whole thing and wanted to get Punk on and really thought that, you know, he was going to be, this was actually a legitimate thing, he was going to be fired. One of the tip-offs to me, and I don't know if you noticed this, Brian, last week they cut his mic off, and he did such a good job kind of playing to that. When he did it again this week, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with this, whether he's going to stay or not, but to me it would seem like he's staying.
Well, the thing is this. There were... I can tell you this about the promo. Like, the WWE writers, they were not in on this. This was not a promo scripted for him by the writers. The writers and all the wrestlers, they all sat there and they were, I don't know if in awe is a good word, but they thought the whole thing was just great. And there were a lot of wrestlers tweeting about it afterwards. But the whole thing is when you actually listen to the promo and you listen to what he said and you listen to when he said things, and when you listen to, for example, when he talked about Colt Cabana and he looked over at the camera, they just happened to have a camera ready for him to look into.
Twice he did that.
He made comments about Cabana. He made comments about Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman, which just happened to come on a week that Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman are working on a non-wrestling deal with WWE. They're not coming in to wrestle. It has nothing to do with that. It's a merchandising type of deal. But they are in talks with something about that. So him dropping those names makes sense as well. So, I mean, to me personally, this was a promo that was designed by CM Punk, Vince McMahon, and probably Kevin Dunn. That's the impression that I've been given. And they knew about it, and probably not a lot of other people did. I wouldn't be surprised if Triple H and Stephanie were into it as well, because he really buried them. But when I look at guys that have left WWE in the past, it's very rare that they'll get this big a push into a major match. I mean, Chris Jericho sort of did, but, you know, the thing with Chris Jericho in 2005, or whenever he left the first time, with the SummerSlam match with John Cena, I mean, they pretty much knew this guy's, he's not going to TNA. And I think they know that CM Punk is not going to TNA as well if he does leave. But when I look at everything, I don't know this for sure, but I firmly believe that he is re-signed with WWE, probably secretly. I know that the writers have been told he will be unavailable after the pay-per-view, which some people have taken to suggest that he really is leaving. But all that means is he's going to be unavailable after the pay-per-view. You know, even if he's re-signed, I think there's a very good chance that he is going to take some time off before he comes back. That was one of his demands when he was talking about re-signing. So my guess is that he has signed a new deal. He is going to be leaving the company for a short period of time, or at least not wrestling for a short period of time. And then at some point he's going to come back and do some sort of angle, which actually makes this whole thing very interesting, because when you look at the reaction to the promo and you look at how excited people were about this promo, you really start to think, okay, well, shouldn't he be around? Shouldn't he win the championship? Shouldn't he be the top guy if people are this into it? And I don't think he's leaving with the title at the pay-per-view. I think that he could win the belt for a few minutes, and then a Money in the Bank winner could cash it in and steal it from him. But I don't think he's leaving with the title. And I really think that he is going to be off WWE television for a while after the show. So, you know, a week later, it's an interesting promo, because as great as it was, it's building a lot of people up for something that they're not going to get. You know, I think there are a lot of fans that really want to see him beat John Cena. I think there are a lot of fans that really want to see him, you know, turn those words into actions. But if he's only going to be around for this Raw and then next week's Raw And actually, when I don't even think it would be next week's Raw. He's got like I think he's got two Raws left. But regardless, if he's only around for like two more weeks, you know, that's what did you really get out of this promo?
Well, I guess it would be the igniter to John Cena and Vince McMahon, as Vince McMahon inserted himself into the situation after the show because they had to tape because of going overseas or wherever they had went on that tour. They taped two Raws, and immediately after the show, it was announced CM Punk was suspended indefinitely. Basically, as soon as he walked off, and then in the, you know, there's a spoiler for Raw tomorrow, and I won't spoil it too much, but Vince McMahon actually makes an appearance on Raw and gets into it with John Cena, and, you know, I guess there's the possibility of that, too, because of, you know, I'm sure there's going to be stipulations placed on the match where now it seems to be, it could be Vince McMahon and John Cena as well being the focal point if it's going to be Punk off TV for a while.
Thing is, the way that the whole thing is going down, you know, Vince McMahon, good God, it sounds like there's I don't know if you can hear that, but there's a cascade of fire trucks and ambulances passing by my hotel, so hopefully nothing horrible has happened here in Las Vegas. But anyway, the way that the whole storyline is going and all of the stuff that CM Punk said about WWE and the current direction and everything like that, I mean, he gave a voice to the people. But if he gave a voice to these disgruntled fans and then WWE remains exactly the same, I still don't know what exactly has been accomplished. And if you're going to do a feud with somebody in Vince McMahon, to me the feud has got to be CM Punk and Vince McMahon. CM Punk is the voice of the people against Vince McMahon. John Cena is the voice of the people that buy a lot of merchandise, which the people, the male fans are always booing John Cena. They don't really care about a John Cena-Vince McMahon feud. Plus, Vince McMahon is old. He can't take bumps. He can't do matches. I don't know. It's a real interesting situation, and they're keeping a lot of stuff close to the vest, so I guess we'll find out where they go with all of this. But I don't want to say it wasn't a great promo, because it was.
And apparently, somebody else does not think it's a good promo, and it started to riot in Las Vegas as the sirens are still actually going.
Can you actually hear that?
Yes, I can.
God. All right, everybody, we're going to find out what's going on here, and we'll come back and talk more wrestling, hopefully, unless the town's burning down. So we'll be back in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. What? We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking about the CM Punk promo from Raw. Now would be a good time to do one of the things that I hate. I'm not a big fan of fantasy booking, but I'm going to do a little bit of it here because everyone else is doing it. It's funny, we've been getting some emails here, and I just want to read one of them here, and then that'll help kick off this segment. This person here says, I wanted to know if you thought it was possible that the WWE has signed some sort of agreement with ROH. So that if CM Punk wins the title at Money in the Bank, then they can run an angle where Punk goes to ROH for 3 months, has unification match with the ROH title, and then they run an invasion storyline. Is there any chance that this could happen? And do you think it's just a coincidence the first ROH taping is in Chicago? Actually, that is interesting, but I don't know if I would read too much into that. You might read something into it in a different way, but not in the way that we're talking about here today. I don't think there's going to be an invasion storyline with ROH. It makes no sense for Sinclair Broadcasting to buy them, to put them on their stations all over the country, and then be doing some sort of angle on WWE television. I suppose it's possible. I know there. I can tell you this. There are a lot of people in WWE that think that there's something going on with WWE and ROH, and maybe there is. I mean, WWE could use more developmental territories. I don't know if ROH would like to be a developmental territory. I don't know if there's anything going on, but certainly people have thought about that. But the reason I bring all of this up is because it's very interesting and kind of sad, actually. When WCW was purchased by WWE and everybody knew, okay, it's pretty much inevitable there's going to be some sort of invasion storyline, there's going to be some sort of deal with WWE versus WCW or WWF versus WCW, and we were doing the show on IATA at the time, the same program, Wrestling Observer Live, and actually we may have been on Sports Byline, regardless. We were doing the show, and we were getting all these emails, and there were all of these people that had all of these great ideas about what could be done. And actually, we got so many emails that quite frankly, there were some great ideas, there were some good ideas, and there were some bad ideas. But the point of this is, what WWE actually did was worse than even the worst bad idea that we were sent. And so it's kind of sad because I read all of these things, and I've thought of some ideas myself. I mean, you know, WWE is in negotiations or gave a tryout to the Kings of Wrestling, and the idea of the Kings of Wrestling and CM Punk and maybe one other guy, maybe with Paul Heyman as a mouthpiece or something like that coming in would be, I think that would be awesome. But, you know, I and others have come up with all these ideas, and I think, sadly, and hopefully I'm wrong, but history has shown that most likely what they end up doing with the CM Punk thing is probably going to be worse than any idea that anybody listening to this can come up with, because that's what happens in WWE.
And they had the ability to do it with WCW because they had, you know, guys at their disposal to do it with. If you do an ROH invasion after the Kings of Wrestling, who can you really, really do it with? Size-wise, matchup-wise, I mean, there's, I'm sure there's people that, you know, somebody can make, you know, they'll scream Davey Richards or something like that. Realistically, it's only the Kings of Wrestling to me and the World's Greatest Tag Team. And realistically, the World's Greatest Tag Team has already just re-signed with ROH. And the Kings are, I mean, they would just take Hiro and Claudio if they wanted them. I mean, that's all they would have to do. So as far as a working relationship with ROH, I can't see that happening, although I think what they should do is try to open up some door to ROH and say, hey, look, we can pretty much take your talent when we want anyway, as soon as their contracts run out. How about we take some of these guys from Florida and let them work just somewhere else, anywhere else for a minute? I mean, for them to actually work for developmental reasons, it would actually be a great idea and something that's badly, badly needed. But one thing I hope about this whole change with WWE, and obviously, you know, the reality of this storyline being really good, you know, the fact that they are doing things like, you know, referee stoppages and Ted DiBiase getting choked out by Christian, even though the logic afterwards with him standing at ringside was bad, but at least they're doing things like that. And Cole and Lawler, even though, again, it was goofy in the way that they're working together now, just like is an abrupt break from what they were doing before, I'm actually for it now. So if this is actually an entire turn into some sort of, you know, things that, because it's not just, you know, there's people on the internet and the hardcore fans that are complaining about what WWE is doing, but it's their longtime fans too, the ones that grew up in the 80s and stuff like that, that, you know, actually wants a little bit of that kind of stuff back again, at least more logic to it. And if they can slow down and continue on with this, you know, that's going to be good for WWE. Now, where does Punk go? You know, your idea of, like, having the Kings of Wrestling, I actually think would be a great idea, except I don't know when his non-compete, if he had one, would run out. But Mick Foley, I think, would be a great person to have into that. You can have Punk wait it out for a while because it brings instant credibility to, you know, obviously Punk doesn't need it coming back, but if Foley's staying there with the Kings of Wrestling, it makes sense. When it comes to Paul Heyman, obviously him and Lesnar do not have, you know, talent contracts or anything like that. But if something does come along later on, I would actually probably want to wait for Paul Heyman to make a reappearance back in WWE as long as he's with Brock Lesnar. I probably wouldn't do it with anybody else.
Part of me almost thinks if you do some sort of deal with Punk and two other guys or three other guys or whatever. I mean, I mentioned Paul Heyman's name because he's a great talker, but I mean, really, you don't need a great talker if you've got CM Punk in there. We've been sitting here talking about what a great promo he cut. What do you need a good mouthpiece for in this group? And to me, there have been so many stables that, you know, you create the stable with young guys and then you put a veteran in there. And it's done all the time. Maybe they should give it a chance with the veteran being CM Punk. You know, get Punk in there. It's sort of similar to the Nexus deal, but the Nexus deal, you got to remember, when the Nexus deal first started, it was really hot, and none of those guys could work, really, except for you know, I mean, Wade Barrett was all right, and Justin Gabriel was all right, but, you know, those guys largely were just developmental guys. And it still got over big, because they didn't actually have to get in there and work, and the whole thing kind of fell apart at SummerSlam when they got beaten, and then after that, they had to have matches, and it was just sort of, you know, this is a chance where you get Punk there as leader of the group. You get Hiro and Claudio, they can both work, and you don't give them a WWE guy. You don't give them a current, you don't give them a former, you don't give them a TNA guy, you know, even like a Mick Foley or a Paul Heyman. Don't link them up with anybody. Because in a way, it almost tells people, it almost tells the fans, especially the fans that you're trying to attract with this angle, that these guys really aren't that big a star. because we aren't confident enough, and we're having to give them this former great star to be the leader or the ringleader of this group. Just have these be the guys. Punk and Hiro and Claudio, they show up in the crowd, and you start from there. And I don't expect this to happen, but that's certainly how I'd do it. I'd have him win the title in Chicago. The place would go nuts. I would have him be beaten, probably by Alberto Del Rio. Who knows? Doesn't matter. Unless you wanted to play in the storyline later. And then have him out of action for 3, 4, 5 months. And then they make their big surprise return, and off they go. That gives, if they really, I don't think that here in Claudio need to go to developmental. But if they feel they do, that's a great opportunity to give them 5 months in developmental. Give Punk his time off, and you bring everybody back, and everybody's happy. So that's the way I do the entire thing. But I don't know if that's the way they're going to do it.
Well, that's it. I just think they'd be, since they're so apt to bring back guys now, you know, Shawn Michaels obviously last week was to promote his hunting show, but, you know, Steve Austin and The Rock, and because they've done that, I mean, Mick Foley, if they can convince him to come back, and he would want to do that, it's not that you would need him or give the impression to the, you know, people looking at the Kings of Wrestling that it's, because they're going to prove it in the ring enough. I mean, they look what they've been able to do with their, you know, their music and their, you know, their merchandise and how they carry themselves and all that stuff. They would get over anyway. I mean, they're going to stand out, I think, to a WWE crowd. It's somebody like Mick Foley, though, who you have legitimate reasons, like CM Punk did, about how he was treated and some of the things that they do, and obviously Punk being cut off before telling a bullying story about Vince McMahon. And anyone that's listened to the writers or anybody else who's appeared on, you know, shows, everybody's got a Vince McMahon story, and some of them are bullying ones. So, I mean, you could always play into that. I don't think it's Foley would give the impression that these other guys aren't credible. I think if he plays his role right, he'll be fine. And when it comes to the tag division, too, I mean, obviously, Hiro and Claudio are going to have the belts for a while. At some point, they would do that, and they'd be carrying those belts around for a while. So I don't think it would be a credibility issue with them either.
You know, another thing very interesting that we should mention here, another reason I think that Punk is actually re-signed is the way that they're planning to do, and this could change, but this is the idea right now. For the show in Chicago, oftentimes when they're running a show in a guy's hometown and the guy is a heel, they don't want the guy to be cheered. So what they do is they send the guy out before the crowd, before the show starts, and he cuts a promo, he buries the fans, he talks about how he hates this town, he can't believe he came back, whatever, whatever. And then, you know, they hope that the fans boo the guy when he actually comes out for the show. That's the way they normally do it. But there has been a directive as of last week that they are not going to direct the fans at all for this show in Chicago. So if the fans want to go nuts for CM Punk, then the fans are going to go nuts for CM Punk. He's not going to come out before the show, he's not going to cut a promo burying the town, he's not going to do any of that. He's going to be a Chicago guy in Chicago. And it's going to be a ridiculously great atmosphere because you're going to have the people that love CM Punk and hate John Cena. And there's probably going to be some kids in Chicago that hate John Cena or hate CM Punk and cheer for Cena. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere. And it's again, why would you do something like this? Why would you let a guy work a title match in his hometown and allow him to be a gigantic babyface, knowing that he's supposedly leaving the company? He could go to TNA, he could go back to ROH, he could go to New Japan. It just, to me, it makes no sense to give this guy all of this and expect that he's actually going to leave. So I'm pretty sure he's going to stay. But I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, it is, you know, the bright shining, you know, lights that indicate that, you know, all the reasons that he would be staying. And you know what, that's okay as long as the stories along the way continue to try to live up to, you know, the par that his promo set.
We're going to talk about this later on. I'm sure that we're going to get a lot of emails about it, so we'll get into those a little bit later on in the show. In the next segment, we're going to start talking about the UFC 132 show. Faber versus Cruz. I was there for the show last night. Mike, I'm sure, watched it on pay-per-view. And we'll talk about all of the big fights. We'll talk about some of the rematches that may or may not be taking place. Who's next in line for title shots? Who may be retired? And who, in fact, is not retiring after the show? All coming up in just a second. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. All right. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and as we noted at the beginning of the show, also of Facebook. Mike is now on Facebook. And Mike, do you want to plug this, or do you not want anybody to know where you are on Facebook?
Well, it's too late. I'm already on Facebook, which means anyone can actually come out and see me. Yes, I'm stepping into 2011 in a 2005 way. Got the Twitter, Sempervivi, or twitter.com/Sempervivi, and then you can check me out on Facebook as well. And friend away, I'm trying to get to almost a tenth of as many friends as Brian Alvarez has right now.
50? I'm bad at math. Anyway, yes, check that out, facebook.com. My Facebook is at facebook.com/officialBrianAlvarez, and twitter.com/BrianAlvarez as well. I was all over Facebook last night, Facebooking and tweeting from the MGM Grand, the UFC 132 show, Faber versus Cruz, and the main event of the show. I don't know if there were, when the fight was going on, especially like the first round, it was a really close round. And a lot of the rounds were really close, and I actually thought that no matter who got the decision, I thought that people were going to be outraged. Like, oh my God, it was a robbery, it was a robbery. I don't think I've really heard much of that at all. I don't know what you scored the fight. I thought that Cruz won 3-2. I gave Faber the first and the fourth, I believe, and I gave Cruz the second, the third, and the fifth. I know there were people that gave Faber the fifth, which... on my card, if he gave Faber the fifth, he won the fight. Regardless, it was a very, very close fight, but Cruz walked out with the title. He walked out with revenge, more importantly. And what did you think of the fight, and who did you have the fight scored for?
It was a great, fun fight, and it's one of those fights where it's like it was a... it can be a decisive victory for Cruz in my eyes, but still kind of a draw at the same time. I mean... that's how it was. Again, like you were saying, I mean, if somebody scored a bunch of 10-10 rounds, it really wouldn't shock me all that much. I gave Faber the first and the fourth, and then gave Cruz the second, third, and the fifth. So I think that totals up to 49-47. And I thought there were going to be, I thought it was going to be a split decision. I thought Faber was actually going to get a lot more rounds. And I thought when I woke up this morning and looked at, you know, how other people had it scored from all over the place, that was going to be the same way. But, it's pretty universal that everyone had, Dominic Cruz winning the fight. It's just the amount of rounds that you actually gave him. I was a little surprised at first when I heard the 50-45 score or whatever it was, the 50-46 score. It was like, well, geez. You know, I can't believe, you know, somebody thought Faber got shut out, and then I'm thinking back on each round, and it's, you know, it's very believable that you gave every round to Cruz. I just think the only thing you can say about the fight is that Faber won all of them. It was certainly a close fight, but I thought still, even though I'd want to see the fight again, to me, still 3-2, Cruz clearly won.
Now, we'll get into this fight more here in a second, but while we're on the subject of decisions, the Seaver fight, Handsome Matt Wyman and Dennis Seaver, was a very controversial fight. I had a lot of people emailing me and texting me after that one saying, oh my God, what a horrible decision, what a horrible decision. I had the fight for Seaver, in fact, and Dana White had the fight for Seaver, and I believe Justin Bieber had it for Handsome Matt Wyman, if I recall correctly, as did Lorenzo Fertitta. Yes, Justin Bieber was there scoring fights next to Dana White last night. And how did you see that fight scored?
Yeah, it kind of surprised me that so many people had Seaver winning, because I thought the second round, I mean, I gave it to him 10-8, and I know I was kind of, you know, hedging at the end of the round, going, well, if there wasn't the blood, he didn't cut him, you know, would it have looked as bad? And I thought, yeah, I believe it was a 10-8 round. So even though I gave Seaver the first, and then I gave Wyman the third round too, and that seems to be the round that swings everything for everybody. I thought Wyman won the final round, which put him 29-27. And even if I hadn't given him a 2-point second round, he still would have won the fight in my eyes, 29-28. If you wanted to call it a draw, I could see that. I'm just a little bit surprised with the number of people that thought Seaver won, even though he did put on a hell of a fight.
Yeah, I thought the fight came down to the third round. I thought that Wyman obviously took the second. I gave Seaver, the first and the third. And Wyman, I don't know. A lot of people, I mean, there were people who thought it was a 10-8. I didn't think it was a 10-8. You know, if you're going to use more open scoring, then sure, it was a 10-8 round. But based on the current 10-point must system, I didn't feel that was a 10-8 round. I mean, yes, he was very, very bloody. But, I mean, sitting there at cage side watching the fight, I didn't really even watch it on the big screen. This was one that I kind of just, I watched in the octagon. Sometimes you watch them on the octagon. Sometimes if they're on the ground and there's a post in front of you or whatever, you watch it on the big screen. But, you know, I saw the guy, he was covered in blood. But it never felt like at any moment during that fight that it was even close to being stopped. Unlike, for example, the Andre Winner fight, where it not only looked like Andre Winner was going to be stopped, it looked like he could be killed. You know, that to me was a 10-8. And the fact that one judge didn't give that a 10-8 to me was, like, preposterous. But, you know, I thought, okay, you know, in a fight like this where they've split rounds, which I felt is what they had done, they split rounds and the last round is close, then it doesn't matter who gets the deal. It is a fair decision no matter which way you go. So that's what I thought about the fight, and that's what you know, a lot of other people thought as well.
Well, that's the whole thing, and the whole thing is it was a good fight, and that's, you know, the biggest thing to take out of it. And Wyman's got his fans, and I just thought when Wyman got the double A, he just ran, and that's not being there too, and not sitting, you know, cage side. It just didn't look like Seaver was able to do anything, and he was, you know, obviously not getting laid out with every single elbow, but he was taking so much where it was so one-sided, and he had no offense, that that's what kind of just was the final thing that dragged it over the line for me, because even though he was staying alive, he wasn't, he was just basically defending, and again, I wasn't there to see the intricacies of watching him, you know, from underneath there, but that's what kind of dragged it over for me. The same thing in the third round, where Wyman, I thought, took the last minute of the round, even though Seaver did kick out his leg there at the very end, I thought, you know, Wyman did just enough to put it over the top, but, you know, again, everything, at least that was televised on this show, was awesome, so I can't complain about really anything on here.
The Weber fight was interesting because the scores ended up being Cruz 50-45, Cruz 49-46, and Cruz 48-47. So pretty much regardless of how many rounds you thought Cruz won, if you thought he won the fight, there was a judge for you. And I was in the 48-47 camp. As noted, I thought that Weber took two of the rounds. But it was a very good... It was a close competitive fight, and Dave Meltzer and I were talking about this the night before, and we were talking about who is going to win this fight and what is the best decision. And our conclusion was, obviously, and this was not a secret in UFC, they would have preferred for Uriah Faber to win, because Faber, you know, he's a big star, he's very charismatic, he can easily carry the division, he can carry a pay-per-view. I think this show is going to do close to 500,000 buys. And that's because of Uriah Faber headlining with Cruz. And you got to give Cruz credit. He did an awesome job on the Countdown special. But regardless, you know, Cruz is not going to be able to carry a pay-per-view like Uriah Faber can. So, you know, that's obviously for business the best winner. And then there was the flip side. If Cruz went in there and he danced around and he used his movement and he never really hit anything, and he had a five-round boring decision win over Faber, that would have been, like, the opposite. That would have been a complete disaster. And what happened was actually, like, kind of in the middle, leaning towards the Faber win. I mean, he did not win, but he went in there. He had a great fight. They went back and forth. It was very close. Nobody hurt the other guy, really. Nobody beat the other guy up. Faber got a couple of knockdowns. It was interesting after the show. Faber's lost fights. And usually when he loses fights, he's pretty gregarious about it. It's like, you know, I lost today, I did my best, but man, maybe next time. You could tell when they read the decision, he thought he won this fight, and he was not happy. And Uriah Faber is not the guy, after a fight, if he loses, to go out there and say, you know, I thought I won. But that's what he said here. He thought he won this fight. So that's the kind of fight that it was. And, you know, I think if you... for business, I think the best thing they could have done was book a rematch. They're not going to do that. I think Demetrius Johnson and Dominic Cruz is probably the next fight for the title, which is not headlining any pay-per-views. It's impossible. But, you know, if Faber goes in there and destroys somebody, and Cruz goes in there and beats Mighty Mouse, then I think it would be a good idea to do this rematch, and I think it would do big numbers.
Yeah, I would say you have to. I mean, look, Faber can be their Oscar De La Hoya, obviously not on such a grand scale. I mean, scale down the pay-per-view numbers, but, you know, as far as getting like 550 or building him up to 600, even 750 at some point, yeah, you can do that with Uriah Faber, and he doesn't need to have the belt or not. He just keeps needing to have fights like that. And again, you know, for there's a significant number of people that may not react to that well. I think if you market him right and you take care of him right, Uriah Faber can lose some fights and still be okay. It won't be like a Kenny Florian situation where you're like, oh, well, he's kind of a gatekeeper to like the top four guys in the division or something like that. When he was at 155, I think you can do a lot more with Uriah Faber, and this was a great fight for it. And again, you know, Demetrius Johnson stepped in for Brad Pickett and beat Miguel Torres. So, yeah, he's probably going to be the one that gets the fight, but that's not going to be a big fight whatsoever. And then after that, what else do you have? I mean, yeah, I guess you could have Torres, but he would have to probably fight somebody else before he fights Cruz. Pickett, I guess, is there, but, you know, Cruz has beaten everybody else. I mean, Jorgensen, I thought, was going to be one of his bigger threats, and he kind of laid waste to him last time around. I was surprised in the way he was able to handle him. So, I mean, Cruz is at his best right now, and again, I figure he's going to beat Johnson. So you've got to do Cruz Faber again. I know people might look at that and complain that Faber's being taken care of or something like that, but yeah, that's okay. I mean, he does hold up to, as of right now, he hasn't put any boring fights or come up with dumb excuses or anything like that. He didn't, you know, he broke both of his hands against Brown and still didn't really, you know, that's not held against him as an excuse or anything like that. So, even though there's going to be people that complain about it, logically, for every aspect of everything, after the Johnson fight, unless something wacky happens where Torres is, you know, would get the shot again, why would you not do that Faber fight?
We have probably seen the end of the career of Wanderlei Silva, and I know that retirements are a funny thing in wrestling and MMA, but Dana White kind of made it clear that it was probably over. They had a fight, him and Chris Leben, Wanderlei Silva and Chris Leben. And, you know, Joe Rogan was talking about how it could be the fight of the decade. And Leben talked about how he envisioned nothing less than a three-round war. He said he'd never gone into a fight more scared in his entire life. Said he grew up watching Wanderlei Silva. Wanderlei was his favorite fighter. It was his chance to get in there and stand and bang with him. And what it was, I think, you know, there are a lot of fighters that say they're going to go in there and stand and bang. They're going to throw hands. And then the first thing they do is a takedown. But that wasn't happening in this fight. These guys were going to go in there, and they were going to stand and bang. And they were going to hit each other in the face as hard as they could. And one guy was going to go down. And my thought was, if one guy is going to go down, it's probably going to be Wanderlei Silva. I thought this was not a battle of stand-up prowess. This was a battle of chins. And Wanderlei doesn't have a chin anymore. And he got hit. He went down. He got knocked out so bad that he pulled guard on the referee and was going for like an arm bar. And they had to come in and restrain him, and they dragged him out. And he appears to be fine. He walked out. He was a little off balance and such as he left the octagon, but he ended up okay. But I don't know what's left for Silva. This appears to be the end of the road.
Unless you do a gimmicky fight like an Akiyama in Japan or something like that, I mean, no, it's pretty much over for him now. And I think that's okay from everything that's happened with Pride and everything else. I mean, you know, 35 years old now, taking a hell of a lot of punishment, it's over.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. All right. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here live from Las Vegas, Nevada, where last night UFC 132 took place. And for those of you that did not see the show, for those of you that were not following it, there was a story involving Tito Ortiz. Yes, Tito Ortiz, who has been around since, I believe, UFC 13. 13, everybody. It's UFC 132 right now. He's been around a long time. And he was going into this fight. He had not won a fight since 2006. And the fight he won in 2006, by the way, was a fight with Ken Shamrock, who was washed up. And everybody knew that Ken Shamrock had no chance of winning. So really, his last loss against a top-caliber opponent was probably 2004 or 2005. It's been a long time.
It was Patrick Cote in 2004.
Oh, my God. He had not had a win over a top competition since 2004. So he was essentially told, you either win this fight or you're done for. And he trained. He worked really hard. He was booked in a fight with Ryan Bader, who is younger, stronger, a better wrestler, former Ultimate Fighter winner, and the odds were long. I believe they were minus 550 for Ryan Bader, plus 450 for Tito Ortiz. Long, long odds. Nobody thought Tito had a chance of winning here. I mean, you know, usually when you ask people, okay, well, who do you think is going to win this fight? You know, even if it's a fight like, I don't know, Faber-Cruz, you know, nearly everybody said that Cruz was going to win. But there were a couple of people that thought, you know, Faber could pull this out. He's a great fighter. I didn't talk to a single solitary human being that thought that Tito Ortiz was going to win this fight. This was a fight where Tito was going to come out. He was going to do his last walk to the ring. He was going to get in there with the new generation. He was going to get in there with a younger, stronger, bigger version of himself. That younger, stronger, bigger version was going to knock him out. And that would be the end of Tito Ortiz. So, Tito came out, did his usual entrance. He had all of his flags. He marched his way to the ring. They did all of the ring intros. Bader was huge and jacked up. And that's your cliffhanger. We're going to head to a break. We'll tell you what happened when we get back after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare here at WrestlingObserver.com. And we're talking UFC 132, MGM Grand last night. And Mike, I don't know if you know this story or not, but last night I'm here with my wife, and we got a lot of friends here. And last night we're over at the MGM. We're trying to figure out something for her to do during the show. And they've got Ka, the Cirque du Soleil show. And so we're in line seeing how much tickets cost and when the show times are and that sort of thing. And we have to decide between, I think, a 7 o'clock and a 9:30 show. And the 9:30 show was a little bit cheaper, so we thought, let's just do 9:30. Show's going to end at 9. We got to do the press conference. Dave's got to write his article. We won't be done till 11:30 anyway, so it'll be perfect timing. We can all meet up afterwards. So she gets the tickets, and we're there with a buddy of ours named X. That's all you need to know, X. And all of a sudden, X's like, oh my God, Dana's in the MGM giving away tickets. And Todd Martin's there, and he goes, oh, where's it at? And X goes, hey, he's down by the whatever they call it, the Octagon America tour, the bus or whatever. Todd's like, oh, I know where that is. Follow me. So we follow him out there, and there's a gaggle of people, I guess you could say. And they're all gathered around this fella, and he's got tickets. And we shove my wife into the big mosh pit, and she's reaching with her hand, and two free tickets. UFC 132, she snagged. So it's real, everybody. Dana does, in fact, give away free tickets to the show. Now, I will say that he probably only gave away about, 50 to 100 tickets. So if you're one of those guys who was on Dave Meltzer's flight and you flew all the way here to Las Vegas without tickets because you thought you were going to get one from Dana White because they're free and easy to get, well, they are free, but they are not easy to get. So I think those guys may be taking either a sad flight home to San Jose or a flight home to San Jose with about $600 less in your pocket. So never fly out here with no tickets thinking they're going to be free. We'll talk about Tito when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. There you go. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've been teasing for about 20 minutes what happened with Tito Ortiz. For those of you that don't know, we'll tell you here in a moment. But we were talking about free tickets, and I was actually discussing this with Dave Meltzer yesterday, the idea that he legitimately, I'm not kidding, he was on the plane here, and there were guys that were talking amongst themselves about how they were coming to Vegas, and they had no tickets for UFC, but they were coming for UFC, and they figured they would just get free tickets from Dana. And he found that mind-boggling, that it has come to this. And it's an interesting thing to talk about here, because in a way, it's really cool that Dana gives away free tickets. And I say that because my wife ended up with free tickets to the show because of Dana. But at the same time, let's just say that you've got an 18,000-seat building. I think the MGM, I don't know how many actually, it's probably set up for 14 or something like that. I think they had 12-7 last night or something like that. But let's just say you have, 13,000 tickets, all right? And you decide to help publicize this show, we're going to set aside 500 tickets, okay? So instead of selling 12,000, you're selling 11,500. And you're going to split those 500 tickets up into five different secret locations. And you're going to tweet the locations over 5 days, and people are going to come out, and each time they come out, you're going to give away 50 pairs of tickets, okay? Now, in the grand scheme of things, in the grand scheme of 13,000 available tickets, and there are still 12,500 for sale afterwards, this is not a big deal at all. You know, you're giving away 500 tickets out of 13,000. Who cares? It's not going to make any difference. But nowadays with Twitter and with the fact that Dana's got like a million something followers and you know, they publicize this on Facebook and on Twitter and everything like that, even if you're only giving away 500 tickets, the fact that like millions of people are hearing about this if they're following you on Twitter, people are probably getting this idea that like thousands and thousands and thousands of free tickets are given away. And you don't have to buy a ticket. And all you have to do is show up in Vegas, and there are free tickets all over the place. And that's really not how it is. But I don't know how that affects – I mean, clearly it probably didn't affect ticket sales too bad. But, you know, Dave and I were kind of talking about, will this affect ticket sales? Is this bad? What is your take on this?
Do enough people actually think that way, though? Where they would do that?
I don't know.
I mean, I can see being the first thing you say because it's kind of become a one-liner, I guess, for some people to say, yeah, I'm going out there and you know, I'm just going to wait till Dana gives me tickets, but they're going out there with the intention of maybe trying to get free tickets but then buying them. I mean, if you make the trip all the way out there, you're probably going to have to buy scalp tickets or go on StubHub while you're there and get an instant ticket or something like that. I mean, that just seems to be what would be a high minority that would be going purely to get the free tickets. And I don't think – I wouldn't think that many people think that they're giving away massive amounts of tickets either. I just I'd be really surprised by that, actually. And I don't think at the end of the day, unless he is giving away, you know, thousands of tickets, that it makes that big of a deal. I mean – The easiest remedy to this is if they're giving away 500 right now and they think for even in the slightest reasoning that it's hurting everything else, then the next time they have a show, they give away only 50 tickets. They make just a big of a production out of everything, but they only give away, you know, they scale it back and give away a lot less, and then that hopefully will then change the mentality of the people to go, well, I might as well just go ahead and buy tickets. And if I just happen to go get the free ones from Dana, I'll go resell those or see if those are better than the tickets I have or something like that. But I can't believe there would be that many people that it would affect them either going to a show for that reason or not buying tickets at all and then just, you know, waiting for Dana to just hand them out. I can't believe that would be the case.
Well, I think the key is not to give away more or less. But I think what you need to do if you're Dana – I mean, if it were me – I would say on Twitter, instead of saying, all right, I'm going to be at the MGM in 15 minutes, be prepared, I'm going to tell you where the free tickets are at. I would go on and say, I'm at the MGM, I've got 25 free tickets, so you better hurry.
Yes.
You know, throw a number out, throw a low number, even if you've got 1,000 tickets, throw out the number like 30. So at least the people that are hearing the Twitter, you know, they're like, oh man, you know, they give away free tickets, but you got to be really lucky to get one. That's the key. You got to think, I got to be really, really lucky to get one. Not, man, I just go out there and walk around Vegas and Dana's on every street corner with free tickets. Because that, believe me, that is not how it is. So, Tito, his back is against a wall. He's in the cage. Ryan Bader, I might add. And this is a lesson for all you youngsters out there with Twitter. Ryan Bader was tweeting from the cage. That's right. He didn't have somebody backstage tweeting for him. He actually, according to someone in UFC, was inside the cage tweeting. Bad idea. So, fight starts. Tito rocks him with a shot. Bader goes down. Tito Ortiz puts him in a guillotine. Ryan Bader taps out. Tito Ortiz beats him via submission in the first round. The place went haywire. They went absolutely haywire for this. It was, I mean, say what you will about Tito. I know a lot of people hate Tito, but this was like a great moment in UFC history. This guy that in a lot of ways helped build this company. You know, you got to remember, like, back in 2002 or whatever it was, the Tito Ken fight that did like 100,000 buys on pay-per-view. I mean, you know, there's no guarantee there would be a UFC today without that fight, because the Fertittas looked at that and thought, good God, we can there's potential here.
Hey, even before that, the full page ad they would have in USA Today and everything, when they went back to Atlantic City, everything revolved around, I think there was the Playboy model Victoria Silvstedt or whatever her name was, everything always revolved around Tito Ortiz.
Yeah. And then you think about the huge series he did with Ken Shamrock in 2006, and he helped build the company. And I've even argued in the past the idea that Ken Shamrock, you know, I think UFC and Ken Shamrock should be on great terms right now. I think they should do what they can. Maybe not take care of Ken Shamrock or anything like that, but he was such an important part. UFC is here today in large part because of Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz and the guys like Hoyce Gracie, you know, guys like that. But anyway, you know, Tito was one of those guys that helped build the company. This was the end of the line for Tito if he lost his fight. This was the end of the line. And he won via submission in the first round. And then he went to the press conference and was just like an amazing man. I mean, I don't want to call him like a worker or something like that, but he's a worker. And he's a carny, and he's just like, he's an amazing human being. He took over the press conference. You know, he talked about, I did this for my family and my kids. Meanwhile, of course, you know, like 2 weeks ago, his Johnson was all over Twitter, and him and Jenna Jameson have got a divorce about 8 times on Twitter. But no, now they're a big, happy family. Everybody loves each other. You just got to do your best and fight and never give up. I never gave up, he said. Every day at the end of practice, when I was done with practice, I raised my arms over my head like I was a winner. I had this fight envisioned in my head. He was, like, so awesome at the press conference.
Right, he had a back injury that would cripple 10 men.
He had a cracked skull in one of his fights. He had a broken freaking neck. He had a broken back. His knees are shot. But by God, he what did he say? He said something preposterous, like, you know, I've lasted this long because I've stayed healthy. I was like, you stayed healthy? You had a cracked skull, a broken back, a broken neck, your knees are shot. How is that healthy? But anyway, the UFC needs a Tito Ortiz. I don't know if they need more than one. Probably not. But they need at least one Tito Ortiz. And to me, thank God they still got him.
Every sport needs a Tito Ortiz, especially a sport that takes place on a canvas mat. And he is certainly that guy. Look at that, David Haye. He didn't take his boot off and show a broken toe and complain that that was the reason that he couldn't beat Vladimir Klitschko. Hey, look, to the winner goes the spoils. Everyone thought Ortiz didn't have a chance in this fight. The fact that he is talking even more afterwards, I mean, the whole thing ended up being, this is great, because the one thing is, you didn't hear Ortiz talk a lot. I mean, there was a little bit in the press conference beforehand, but you didn't hear Ortiz outside of that dong shot that he took of himself and put on Twitter. You didn't hear him talking a whole lot, and let him talk all of this stuff afterwards, because that was actually fantastic. So he's probably only got one or two more fights, but good for him.
So those were the highlights of the show. There was also there was one controversial thing we can talk about here very quickly, was the Andre Winter fight. He went in there and faced Anthony Njokuani, and Anthony just destroyed him in the first round. I mean, one of the most vicious beatings you've ever seen. The referee did not stop it. Andre Winter survived, ended up coming out, and he survived the fight. And one judge actually gave the first round 10-9, which I found preposterous. We can talk about that a little bit more after the break. Plus more pro wrestling and MMA news, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking Tito Ortiz's big win last night, and before we went to the break, we talked about the Anthony Njokuani fight with Andre Winter, who was most certainly not a winner last night, particularly in the first round. And how did you score that round?
Well, I didn't see that fight, actually, so I just heard of what's come from it afterwards, but it just seems to be universally everyone saying the same thing, which was, how could you not give it a 10-8?
You've never even seen a beating like this. And the thing was, the guy never went down, which was most astonishing. I mean, He was hit in the face so hard with elbows and punches and knees. I mean, Muay Thai knee after Muay Thai knee to the chin.
Ugh.
And he did not go down, and he kept getting hit and hit and hit. And I was like, oh, my God. And it was – I was right there. I mean, it's one thing to watch it on TV, but when you're right there and you hear a knee go into a dude's chin really hard over and over and the spit's flying, I was like, this is the worst thing I've seen in my whole life. And just absolutely brutal. And then I get the scorecards, and Patricia Morse Jarman, thought that was a 10-9 round. She gave Andre Winner 9 points for that round. I don't know how you do that, but there you go.
And then again, you know, boxing, she's done this in boxing too. So
how was the boxing last night? I heard it was awesome.
You know, everybody, and I don't want to insult any fans of the Klitschko brothers. I don't want to insult any fan base that we have in Germany and in Russia. Look, there was David Haye needed to win that fight for heavyweight boxing. Nothing against the Klitschko brothers, but as far as trying to get somebody in there who's amped up and who's a little bit smaller and would, you know, can face off against some other guys, David Haye in that mouth needed to win. Unfortunately, David Haye went out there and did not have that many good rounds, including, you know, the 12th round being his best about, and the fact that he finally got fired up and actually threw some punches. Just a disastrous performance. And that was a heavyweight championship fight that most people probably didn't see at all, that HBO showed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's the state of heavyweight boxing right now. Now, Germans are happy. About 65-70% of the of German television sets were on the fight. And again, it's nothing against the Klitschkos. They are very big. They are very good. It's just the problem is nobody else is. Haye was about the only hope. And, well, that's where we're at right now. And there's going to be boxing people, too. When this pay-per-view buy rate is announced, and I was hoping it was going to do like probably around 475 or so. I'm thinking like 450 to 475. There's going to be people that look at that and go, you know, this boxer or that boxer did, you know, far more buys than that. You look, Uriah Faber is going to do 450,000 pay-per-view buys, and they couldn't even get Klitschko and David Haye, which is about the only heavyweight title fight you can make that anybody would care about, except for the Klitschko brothers fighting each other. That was on HBO for free. And that's really shows you everything you need to know about heavyweight boxing right now.
We got an email here about, of all things, CM Punk, a booking idea. Let's look at this. This person here, Chris, says, here's my booking idea. It leads to the Survivor Series. He says, Punk wins the title and leaves the company. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the beginning. Number two, Cena is fired due to the stipulation. By the way, we should mention that Survivor Series, actually, last year, stipulation that Cena was going to have to be fired. And he never missed a single television show.
Oh, by the way, folks, this is a spoiler.
Yeah, he did not even miss 1 week. Not a single week of television after he was fired. So the idea that they are now doing another stipulation that if CM Punk leaves the pay-per-view, Vince McMahon said, with the championship, John Cena will be fired. Now, how anybody could possibly believe this after the Survivor Series last year, I have no idea. But let's just go with it. So Cena's fired. Cena buys paid time on WWE TV to do interviews, calling Punk out and asking for his job back. The reason is he's the main event at Mania. He promised Rocky would be there, and the title means more to him than anything else. Take video of Punk at other independents, maybe ROH with the belt. People asking when he's going to come back. Do a cameo of Rock calling Cena because he lost and Punk has the title. Build to a rematch in Survivor Series, and then Cena wins the belt and keeps it till WrestleMania. So basically he's saying that you give Punk the title, and he leaves the company, and he goes and defends it in ROH, for example. What do you think are the possibilities of that actually happening?
It's within the realm of possibilities. It's not only New Japan and WWE, even though TNA works with New Japan. It's not like they've never had closed doors or anything like that before. So that would be something that would be really cool. The problem is, mainstream fans, I think, would get it to a point. I guess the title doesn't mean that much anymore, but I don't know if they're going to look at that as universal enough for all of their fan base. It would be really cool as a wrestling fan if that happened. I just don't think that they would, when push comes to shove, that they would actually do something like that.
I also wonder, what would you do with ROH and the ROH title? Would you? It just seems kind of weird because ROH is going to have to be there after this is over. And I don't know. Maybe ROH assumes that all their fans know that the I don't know. They try and push their title as so important, and you would be doing an angle where Davey Richards, for example, would have to be kind of the secondary champion, or he'd have to claim he's the number one champion and Punk is number two, and they'd have to have matches, which of course couldn't have finishes. I mean, there's things you could do, but I just think this is like way more than WWE is going to want to do for an angle.
Plus, you're going to have to hire way too many cleanup guys to get in there and find out wherever Jim Cornette was when his head explodes hearing about all this stuff.
Let's look at some of the other emails here. This is one for you. Could Great Muda have become a superstar in the WWE during his prime?
Yes. Yes, he could have. The character that he was, I mean, as long as he had a mouthpiece there, and I love Gary Hart with him, but you take him up to WWE and he is a, I don't know if they would have put him with it. He's a Heenan family level talent. Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude, you know, in that vein of guys that Heenan had. And, you know, as long as he had a mouthpiece there that would fit, and I think Heenan would have been the guy. Absolutely, because Muda could work with anybody. I mean, obviously the matches with Flair and Sting, I mean, I would have been, even at that point, I mean, very early in his career, that pretty much was. He was only in the business for a couple of years, you know, before that. He did time in Florida and Puerto Rico and obviously in Japan, but... Yeah, he could have been fine wherever he went. It was too bad that WCW basically screwed that up so much and that, you know, they basically had him go back to, were going to be a good guy way too early. They shut him out in the Iron Man Starcade. I can't remember what year that was. It may have been 89, I think it was, after the hot summer that they had. I think he would have been a star no matter where he is. I mean, look at him today and the fact that he runs All Japan and they've been able to keep that going by developing guys and not being so behind the eight ball as far as talent goes that he's booked in a way a little bit more American style with his guys because of not having what Noah and New Japan has had. So, yeah, I think he would have adapted just fine. He would have had the mind to do it, and, yeah, he would have been a big star and really should have probably been a bigger star here, even though he arguably is, at least for the quote-unquote modern era of wrestling fan from, you know, 70s on, probably the greatest Japanese import they've ever seen.
This person here says, what's the update on the Kings of Wrestling and the WWE? Is there a possibility they will go to Vince? Yes, there is a possibility.
Kings and Cold. Imagine them on a Survivor Series team with CM Punk.
With Colt Cabana?
Yes. And you know what? Sarah Del Rey, too, even though they won't take her, and that would be too bad. You could always have the queen there, although I'm sure they'll... Hopefully, if they say the Kings of Wrestling do sign, please don't give them Rosa as a queen.
And by the way, don't think that the mention of Colt Cabana was a coincidence or a shoot, because it was not. This person here says, what is your gut feeling? Is Triple H wrestling at SummerSlam? My gut feeling is Triple H is probably not going to wrestle until next year's WrestleMania, and that is whether or not, provided that Undertaker comes back. Because I think if Undertaker can come back, they'll probably do a rematch for the big number 20. And if Undertaker cannot come back, I don't know if you'll see a lot of Triple H anymore. I would guess probably not.
I know one guy he would be against, although it would be he would have to overload this WrestleMania with this one guy. Say it actually gets to the point where you do have Brock Lesnar come in for one. That would be the only other person I could see Triple H going against, in that he's, you know, not fending off the outsider per se, but that's about the only guy I could think of. And especially because Brock Lesnar is not going to be wrestling that many pro wrestling matches before something like that would happen, where you have a guy like Triple H who is not going to be a concern. So, yeah, unless it's The Undertaker, the only person I can see is going to be against somebody like a Brock Lesnar.
This person here says, any reason Vince would allow Randy Orton to talk about his OD? Was he told to be open about it? Yes, Randy Orton did an interview a couple of days ago. And aside from burying Kelly, which he ended up apologizing for later, he insinuated she had slept with, I believe, 10 men. And she was not happy with that, and so he had to apologize. But he also noted that, what's so funny?
Sorry, I'm just thinking about a hooker in Vegas walking by like the window right now screaming 10, and just like keep on going.
Indeed, yes. They would not think twice. So, he talked about his OD as well in 2006, which had not I mean, there were certainly rumors at the time, but it had never come out that it actually happened. And he was quite open about it in this radio interview. And here's the deal. Randy Orton is doing a DVD for WWE. And nothing is going on the DVD unless they want it on there. So I'm sure he told the whole story. And for whatever reason, they figured, okay, well, we can somehow tie this in and claim that it happened before the wellness policy. And the wellness policy ended up saving his life. You know, they'll just spin it however they want. And they figured that this is a great story for the DVD. And so now they want him to tell the story elsewhere so that people will go out and buy the DVD. Pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty much. And obviously Orton has been either a little bit more freedom or has taken a little bit more freedom in interviews before. And that's obviously what he was doing here. And it probably, obviously, well, not probably, it did go a little bit too over the top there. And obviously discussing Kelly and everything, it's just,
well, I should say the Kelly thing was like, it was an offhanded remark,
yeah.
And the hosts were goading him into it. But, you know, something like openly talking about your OD, believe me, this stuff does not happen without WWE approval. It just doesn't.
That and the concussions, which the concussions
exactly.
Thing, and I think they are just underrating right
actually,
now.
Mike,
I think
Mike,
it's
Mike, we have to head to a break. Oh. Mike, we have to head to a break. We'll talk about this when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. All righty. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And, Mike, we were talking about a Randy Orton interview. He was talking about overdosing. He was talking about Kelly sleeping with people. And, as you mentioned right as I rudely cut you off to go to break, talking about the fact, and this was very interesting, that he claimed that the concussion that he suffered 2 weeks ago in a match in Italy, he said was a really bad one. Now, the reason that's interesting is because that was a concussion where 5 days later, he took the WWE's Impact concussion testing deal and passed and ended up working the pay-per-view 2 days after that. Now, at the time, we were doing a debate about, okay, is this Impact testing is it any good? There are certain experts who say it's great. There are other experts who say it's BS. You know, what are we talking about here? But the key to the whole thing was, I thought, okay, you know, whenever someone suffers a concussion, there should be a mandatory time off. We were talking about this. Should it be 2 weeks? Should it be a month? Should it be 6 months? Who knows? But there should be some sort of mandatory time off, and then you should, you know, pass the Impact testing or whatever like that. And I thought, okay, you know, he didn't take any time off. He took 5 days, but he passed the test, and presumably it was a minor concussion. The fact that he said it was a serious concussion, and he was back in the ring like exactly a week later, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, yes, and the fact that, and again, I don't know what the intention was bringing it up. It wasn't probably how it's been taken, but with so much being done on concussions, I don't know if it was to say that, you know, to show how hard it is or any manhood or anything like that. And I don't think it was said with the intention of showing that, but that's how it comes off in a time where everyone's got to be really careful. And the Impact testing, a lot of people will say, well, it's WWE's doctors and all that sort of stuff. Look, when it comes to the NFL or anything else, too, I mean, Aaron Rodgers was out for the Green Bay Packers this year for a while because of concussions, and they were worried about him getting another one. And, you know, guys are held out. But with that said, it's still not an exact science when it comes to letting guys back in either. Derek Bougard of the New York Rangers, who ended up overdosing this past a couple months ago, he stormed out of the Rangers' offices towards the end of the season because he was not allowed to come back, even though his doctors had cleared him to play. The Rangers' doctors didn't. It's medical practice right now. I've, you know, kind of been on the side of, look, at least 14 days, no matter the grade of the concussion, at least you have to be sat down for 14 full days before you go into the Impact testing. And again, depending on the grade of the concussion, depending on how many you have had, all of those sorts of things. But it's still, this is not an exact science. This is probably going to be an issue that is going to take place forever, because how much more padding can you put in a football helmet? What else can you do to make the game safer without sacrificing other parts of the body because you're pulling up and going half speed? Hockey, the same sort of way. Collegiate wrestling, which a lot of people are forgetting about, which has already taken a lot of hits in a lot of aspects, all of that slamming heads together there. soccer headers. I mean, what in pro wrestling? Are they going to wear headgear in pro wrestling? At what point? It's, again, there's no exact science, and it's tough to try to figure out how much you can possibly do to protect guys where, again, does Orton maybe come off tough guys by saying he's had six or, you know, he was fine to come back that quickly? Maybe that wasn't the intention. I can see people taking it that way. With that said, it's going to get to a point, too, where if a doctor is clearing him, you know, he's fine to say he got six, you know, concussions, because that's the truth. I'd rather have him say that and say a doctor's clearing him every time and he's okay then, and to find out that that's the case, then he's only saying he's had six but actually gets one every single night.
Last week when we did this show, there were a lot of different shows coming up in the afternoon. We of course recorded on Saturday night last week, and so we didn't get a chance to talk about the ROH iPay-per-view or UFC on Versus or Urban Wrestling. And which of those three did you get a chance to see?
I saw most of the ROH show. I saw the Versus show. But listening to you this week, I am going to seek out the replay, because I watched the wrong two things. I should have been watching the Urban Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, you missed a lot, let me tell you. A lot of action packed into 1 hour. The thing with Urban Wrestling was it just was a nightmare in terms of production. It was a nightmare in terms of production. I mean, the wrestling on the show actually was not that bad. And there was stuff on the show. I actually watched the show twice because I had my buddy Vinny watch it before one of the shows we did. And, you know, we had some laughs watching that show. The problem was I had no earthly idea. I mean, I have absolutely no idea who anybody was on that show outside of, like, Homicide, who I know from Ring of Honor, and Eddie Kingston, who I actually wrestled on a show with once. But, I mean, other than guys like that, no idea. No idea. And there were no helpful graphics. I was in the dark during that entire show. And, you know, it is a real-life version of Grand Theft Auto, the promoter has noted. And if that's your thing, check this show out. It is airing on pay-per-view all this month. We got a bunch of reviews up on the site, so you can head up there and check those out. And in-ring wrestling, however, was not nearly as good as ROH. That was awesome. That was an awesome show with an awesome main event. Davey Richards won the title from Eddie Edwards. It was outstanding. The post-match was arguably even better. As a whole, as a whole package between the match and the post-match and the emotion and everything, easy 5 stars. But it's fabulous. What did you think of the main event?
It was absolutely awesome, and it topped off again what was, you know, another awesome iPay-per-view. I don't know. I was wondering how it wasn't even the fact that it was on Sunday. It was the fact that it was in the afternoon again for something that wasn't like a WrestleMania weekend or something like that. I was kind of surprised that the show ended up doing as well as it did. And you know, it was the obvious thing to do, and the way they did it ended up making it awesome. And that was the whole thing. With everything afterwards, it was the same way with, like, the Steam situation. The matches were, again, the match was awesome. But it was what happened after those matches is what made it, you know, great. And it's like, you know, a couple of years ago when they, around the holidays, when they kicked into the Briscoes, Kings of Wrestling feud, and they had Steam and Generico, or Steam turn on Generico. This is like the same sort of thing here in a way with you know, the Steam feud now of they're setting it up for something that's probably going to have the legs to go a long time. And you have to believe in what they're doing. And I'm not sure who Davey Richards' next opponent's going to be, but it's everything after that, you know, taking in the fact that he had quit wrestling and, you know, and took out one, you know, his friend to do it and his, you know, wishing his grandparents, all of that stuff, you know, tied back in again. He is kind of the epitome of Ring of Honor right now, and it's just everything on this show was awesome. And again, not having TV didn't hurt a thing, which means the quality of these shows, as long as the wrestling keeps being good, they keep getting new eyeballs or people returning to it for the first time in a long time, and that's going to be something that just, you know, continues to crank everything on as far as word of mouth going of you're getting your $15 worth.
It did do the highest iPay-per-view buy rate of all time for the company, about 2,100 buys. That's really interesting because the show in December, the final battle show, did 1,900, I believe, was the final number. And keep in mind, at the time, they were building up all of their shows on television. They had ROH on HDNet. And this spring, HDNet got canceled, and you know, at the time it was kind of, okay, well, let's wait and see. You know, how many people were watching ROH on HDNet anyway? It didn't seem like it was, you know, the pay-per-view numbers were going up, but like house show attendance and DVD sales and that sort of thing, those things weren't really going up. So there were people that thought, you know, the TV's great, it's fun, but it's not really affecting business at all. And there were other people that thought, oh my God, they've lost TV. They were on a roll with these internet pay-per-views. Now the numbers are going to tumble. What actually happened was the numbers went up slightly to 2,100. And that's a very, very positive sign going into the Sinclair deal. Now, what that means, I don't know. It is a minor increase. It is an increase of about 10%. And I don't know if that's increased interest in the company. I don't know if, for example, myself, I went out and bought a Roku box so that I could watch this on the television and still have my laptop available to me. I didn't have to plug the computer directly into the TV or anything like that. I just plugged in the box, and it was very easy to do. It was very easy to order and everything like that. So anyway, I got the show on the Roku, and this was the first time I was able to do that. Not just because I had the box, but even if you had a Roku before, you could not get ROH pay-per-views live. You could only get the replays. So, I got it. It was great. And if there were if there were 200 people in the world that bought Roku boxes and got this pay-per-view for the first time because they were able to stream it live, there's your 10% right there. So I don't know if that was the difference. I don't know if it was a little of everything. But the bottom line is that's a great number, 2,100 people.
Yeah, and again, a cynic would say, you know what, they may show more of what HDNet's reach was or what the show's reach on HDNet was, but you know, it doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is it's up, and that's really, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters. Now, obviously, they're not going to start on Sinclair for a while, so, and they're going to have lots of shows, you know, up until then. So it's just going to see, again, it can work, continue to go out. But, it's like we're talking about the UFC shows that are B and C, looked at as B and C level shows. As long as they're stacked, there's probably going to be somebody seeing it for the first time who may turn in and watch it again as far as it being, you know, a great show. And the same thing with these ROH shows. It's a word of mouth thing, and it's getting back fans they used to have and continuing buzz and interest with, you know, things like this whole thing with Kevin Steen and Steve Corino.
Let's think about this stat here for a moment. Someone's actually coming into my room here. Hold on. They apparently tried to come clean. Anyway, think about this stat here for a moment. The ROH iPay-per-view did 2,100 buys with, they didn't even have HDNet. They had no television at all. And they did 2,100 buys. TNA has 1.7 million viewers on Spike TV in prime time. And a TNA B-show pay-per-view can do 8,000 buys. So ROH did a quarter the number of buys of a low TNA pay-per-view with absolutely no TV whatsoever. That is astonishing.
It really is, and I know you can spin those things of they're making, you know, TNA's doing this or doing that or something, you know, as far as the revenue goes and everything, but you can spin it dollar amount or anything else you want to say. It's the amount of eyeballs looking compared to getting them in and getting them into paying. I mean, say you're not that was always wrestling, but that's every form of entertainment of just, you know, the fact that people will watch and just not care, not caring around the storylines, not even know what they're watching and not buy what you're selling. It's just, you know, again, another year of this. So it's an amazing, amazing stat when it comes to TNA, which did do a 1.3 this week. So yay to them for that. But it's amazing.
I mean, think
that
about
you can't get people to
1.7 million viewers, and they got 8,000 buys. And ROH had zero viewers, and they got 2,000 buys.
Well, I mean,
that blows my mind.
Well, that's TNA. I mean, at least Ring of Honor is getting you, at least you know you're going to see wrestling, even, you know, where everything about the characters, the storylines, you're going to get at least wrestling, which appeals to wrestling fans. TNA is just not enough of anything. Except for certain, obviously, beer money as far as being an act. Jared and Angle's feud as far as them wrestling in the ring is being. But outside of isolated things like that are surrounded by so much nonsense and BS, I mean, what are you buying when you're buying a TNA show? It's not enough entertainment. It's not enough wrestling. It's not enough this. It's not enough that. And in a way, that's the same thing that's played WWE, too.
Plus, it's $45. And if you have no friends that want to come over for TNA, you got to bite the bullet for $45. That's a tough one right there. Not like UFC where it's $54, but you can get 10 people to come over and chip in. All right, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. All right. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, if you love this show, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. This is the end of the program for the week. You're not going to be able to hear us for another week if you're listening for free. But if you sign up right now, not only can you go up and listen to last night's show with myself and Dave running down the UFC show, you can listen to Friday night's show as well. You can listen to tomorrow's show, Monday night. We've got shows Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We do shows every single day of the week, and it's all available for $10.99 per month. Not only do you get all of the brand new shows, but we have archives dating back to 2005. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of shows, thousands of hours of audio, interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling and mixed martial arts. We had, I can't even begin to get into all of these. Chris Jericho, Mick Foley, Steve Austin, Bret Hart, Lance Storm is on every other week. Bruno Sammartino, I could go on and on and on. They're all available in the archives right now, and there's no extra fee for any of this. If you love this show, I guarantee that you will love a subscription to the website, because you can listen to us every single day talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. But if you are not sure, head up to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page. We have a listing of our latest three free radio shows. They're absolutely free. Click on the link. There's nothing to sign up for. There are no pop-ups. You just click on the link, you download the show to your computer, to your iPod, to your iPad, to your Android, whatever you want to listen to your audio on, and you check them out. And if you like what you hear, remember, we do shows every single day. 15 to 20 shows every single week. Myself, Dave Meltzer, we have a bunch of other shows as well, including the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with Mike Sempervivi and Adam Summers. And, Mike, I'm sure you've got a new show coming up here pretty soon. Is that correct?
Yes. At some point, we'll be able to record this thing because we have a whole lot to talk about, including a lot of stuff with the CM Punk mentioned in New Japan.
Wrestling Observer Radio, Figure Four Daily, The Adam and Mike Show, The Brian and Vinny Show, Five Star Radio, The Dr. Keith Show, Wrestling Weekly, Tough Talk, Dragon King, and occasionally an After Dark Radio. All of it available at WrestlingObserver.com. Sign up. I guarantee you won't regret it. We are out of here. We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike, and everybody at Sports Byline USA. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.